Why, hello there, you. Before you get on and listen to this latest episode, I want to ask you a question. Do you have enough Myrtleade in your life? If the answer is no, did you know that you can get exclusive access to 2 whole previous seasons, dozens of exclusive episodes, and a catalogue of minisodes? All you have to do is head on over to patreon.com/Myrtleade, spelt Myrtleade, and join our Patreon family. For as little as $5 a month, you get more Myrtleade than your strange mind can handle. The more you pledge, the more you get. Seriously, guys, that is like a single cup of coffee per month, and you help support me as a creator, and you help keep this podcast an ad-free zone. Because, you know, there has to be one space in our lives that's ad-free. Okay. On with today's offering. Going a little bit shit. This is our third recording. Wow. I just kind of sucked today. Anyway, I feel like I say the same thing every time. Start again. What's up, all you sickos? You are listening to Myrtleade, the podcast. I don't need to tell you it's a podcast. You went into an app and chose to listen to it. Right? This is not going well. Fuck. Okay. Well, that's a bit shit. I'm just going to press on. Shout out to James Winchcombe and Simone Heed for becoming our newest members of the Patreon family. Thank you all so much for your support. It humbles me every time I see that someone new is supporting me and the podcast. If you would like more Myrtleade in your life, Patreon is the way to go about it. For as little as $5 a month, you'll get a shit ton more Myrtleade content and exclusive patron-only episodes. You'll get discount merch, free merch for higher tiers, and heaps of background information that goes with the podcast. Pictures, creepy drawings by Martin Bryant, for example. You also get every episode days early. So be the first, get it before everyone else does. Go to www.patreon.com/Myrtleade, spell Myrtleade. So I've been told some people are having issues listening to back catalogue because as new episodes go out, old episodes seem to drop off of some different platforms. So if you want to listen to the back cases, I've put them all on the website at www.Myrtleade.com, and you can listen to everything from episode 1. There you will find t-shirts, pins, and stickers if you want to wear your Myrtleade love, or just freak someone out with a really strange gift. You can also sign up to the Crime Chronicles and get monthly installments of my more serious crime writings. Sorry, I know you can hear my dog fidgeting. This podcast contains graphic depictions of violence, salty language, and poor grammar. If any of these things offend you, well, fuck. Feel free to bitch about it to your mama, because quite frankly, I ain't listening no more. Sources for today's episode are little snippets from 9 News, 7 and 7 News, articles from The Age, multiple articles from the ABC by Cameron Slessor, the Daily Mail UK, an article in the Port Pirie Recorder, the Bulletin, the Morning Bulletin, various reports from the Advertiser in 2005, 2010, 2016, and 2019, perthnow.com.au, and the Narra Court Herald. So this case is still yet to be tried, and proven, etc., etc. So some of the specific information is not yet known. The allegations are yet to be proven. So if I forget, please insert all alleged and supposed in the appropriate places. This is a sad story about the murders of three pensioners, elderly, vulnerable, people who were killed for a few bucks, allegedly by someone they knew. When it all comes out in court, we are all going to know exactly what alleged serial killer Stephen Lensley Haynesworth is all about. But for now, we just have to make do with the barest of tales. For one thing, I know he's about befriending those he can steal from. He's also about beating up and killing old ladies for a buck. Sorry, allegedly about beating up and killing old ladies. See, I forgot already. This is a crime that's been sitting in the back of my head for ages. I have wanted to talk to you about it so badly, but late last year there's some developments and I've been waiting for the trial. I reckon it's probably still a year or so off, and not, to be honest, I can't wait that long to talk. So let's talk turkey now. In 1998, Phyllis Harrison was an independent 75-year-old woman who had lived in her home in Elizabeth South for about 40 years. She had a lovely, super loyal German Shepherd. Dog people are my people. And that was her main company in the house after she was widowed. In fact, locals say she was seen walking her dog every day. She kept a lovely, neat home and garden. Phyllis was a mother and a grandmother, seeing her kids and grandkids regularly. But she didn't, rely on them for her social life. Phyllis drove, she took care of herself, and she was really socially active. She was a founding member of her local church and an avid lawn bowler. She kept herself fit and active and busy. Shit, I don't even do anywhere near all of that. She was 75. I'm really not doing enough with my life. My dog is sitting on my feet right now, looking like she could really use an owner who is just more like Phyllis. One who walked her every day. Sorry, girl, you are stuck with lazy old me. Also, if in this episode you hear snuffling, snoring noises, it's totally my dog. She's become a little dependent on me since the lockdown ended and the kids went back to school. I promise no one's gagged in the corner. It's just my giant snoring pound dog. So Phyllis was pretty security conscious. She lived in an area that had significantly, I suppose the best word is declined over the span of her 40-year occupancy. So when most of the oldies who live in Elizabeth moved in the 40s and 50s, the area was mainly Army and Air Force families and workers from the nearby Holden factory. Slowly, the new emerging town of Elizabeth became increasingly housing trust homes and welfare families. As that happened, the crime rate became increasingly worse, especially drug-related and break-ins in the Elizabeth area. Consequently, many oldies like Phyllis, who were homeowners from before the area declined, didn't move. They didn't want to leave their homes, but they got security screens on their doors and windows. Phyllis had those. She also had deadbolts on the doors and locks and security shutters on the front of the house. She also had a big German Shepherd in her home. Because she had lived there so long, Phyllis was really well known. Everyone knew her and she was a loved member of the community. On Tuesday the 3rd of March 1998, Diane Smoker and her son went to visit Diane's mother, Phyllis Harrison, at her home on Harvey Road in Elizabeth South. They let themselves in the front door as usual, but they discovered that the house, which was usually neat as a pin, had been totally demolished on the inside. 4:30 in the afternoon, they found Phyllis laying dead in a pool of blood on the floor of her own kitchen. She'd been stabbed so many times it was quoted to be a frenzied and brutal attack. She was a tiny little old pensioner. The doors and windows were locked from the inside. It appears that Phyllis let her murderer into her home. The last time she was seen was the evening before at around 7:45 around the corner from her house, walking her dog. Police believe she met her end shortly after that walk. The normally neat and orderly home had been ransacked, and because she was pretty independent and Phyllis had all of her wits, her kids did not keep track of her money or her belongings, so it's pretty unknown to this day exactly what was stolen in that attack. From the outset, Investigators believe that this crime was motivated by the theft and that the murder was to cover that the victim knew her attacker. She wasn't, like, super well off, so it seems she might have been paid for murder just because she was a soft target. The massive overkill indicates whoever did it knew Phyllis and was a bit pissed at her. Because no one stabs a 75-year-old that many times just to take a TV and some dress jewelry or whatever. She wasn't loaded. All they got away with was random, regular household stuff. Police began looking into all of those who knew Phyllis, and those in the immediate area. Her immediate neighbour stood out from the beginning, and he was a then 23-year-old Stephen Hainsworth. He lived directly next door to Phyllis. Hainsworth has been troubled his whole life, possibly drug addicted. He'd had so many run-ins with the law, you know, because he's a total douchebag. Then a witness came forward putting Hainsworth at Phyllis's house around the time of her murder. Hainsworth reacted, you know, normally, as you would, and beat the shit out of that witness, getting jail time for that assault. While in prison, Stephen Hainsworth's relatives scattered like seagulls when the chips are all gone. Most of them cut him off. They wanted nothing to do with him. It was obvious that he was a suspect in a granny murder, and they wanted as far away as possible. But not his loving Aunt Beverly. Beverly Hanley lived alone in the northern suburbs of Elizabeth North. She was a real family person, and she was said to give anyone a second chance. Or in Stephen's case, a third, a fourth, a 52nd. When her nephew Stephen was jailed for beating a potential witness in a murder case, Beverly stuck by him. She wrote him regular letters and kept him up to date on all the family comings and goings. Basically because Beverly was a really good person and she loved with her whole heart. She knew her nephew was troubled, he always had been, but she loved him still and kept him close. In saying this, I don't want you to believe that Beverly is a pushover though. She was anything but. Beverly was a big woman in stature and on the inside. She was stubborn, independent, and decisive. It was said if she loved you, you goddamn knew it. But if she didn't, you would know that too. 10 years after her murder, in 2008, a neighbour of Phyllis's cut down an old hedge and he found a rusted old kitchen knife and rang police. It's now the belief that this is the murder weapon and that it sat in the weather in dense shrubbery for over a decade. The murder of Phyllis Harrison is the first in what at the moment is currently 3 murders in a serial event. Police say these murders are linked by forensic and DNA evidence. My slanderous guess is that we will see more things pile up as time goes on. On Wednesday, October the 6th, 2010, 12 years after Phyllis's murder, a now 64-year-old grandmother, Beverly Hanley, Stephen Hainsworth's ever-supportive aunt, got out of bed in the morning and began her usual routine. Beverly lived alone. Like Phyllis, Beverly lived in a neat little home on Homington Road in Elizabeth North and had all the security screens and locks on her doors. Her little home was flanked by those immaculate teardrop-shaped conifers. She got up that morning, made herself some toast and a coffee and started doing chores. Coming to the laundry at the rear of her home, she started a load of washing. A neighbour heard Beverly having a lengthy conversation with a man and that it evolved into an argument, escalating into a woman screaming, a man yelling, and then silence. They thought the disagreement was all done and dusted, and all was well. They went on about their day. But all was not well. Police believe whoever was fighting... Puppy, sit! Police believe whoever was fighting with Beverly in that disagreement entered the home and confronted Beverly in the laundry. A physical fight ensued. Beverly fought back against her attacker, and in this fight, the washing machine was hit and paused mid-cycle. At 4:30 that afternoon, Beverly's sister popped in for a visit. There was no answer to her knock, and she discovered that although both doors were closed, both the screen and the wooden front door were unlocked. She let herself in and could immediately see that the home was in disarray. She moved throughout the house trying to find her sister, and then when she came to the back of the house and to the laundry, she found a bloody scene. Beverly had been brutally beaten and sustained life-threatening head injuries, which is what eventually killed her. There was a cricket bat found at the scene covered in her blood. She was stabbed repeatedly with a weapon that was taken by the killer. She had multiple defensive wounds on her hands and on her arms. Again, it appeared from the conversation that she was having that Beverly knew her killer and had let him into her house. Her home had been ransacked and her purse was missing. So it appears that once again, this mother and grandmother had been murdered for little more than a few bucks and a TV. Sounds like the work of a real douchebag. And we know one, right? At the time of his auntie's murder, Stephen Hainsworth lived just a few streets away. And he was an immediate suspect from the police and from his family. He and his little family moved out of the area pretty soon after Beverly's murder. Yeah, ladies, this guy now has a partner and three kids. Hands off, he's taken. There's no real evidence at the time to link Stephen to his aunt Beverly's murder apart from speculation, and the case went cold. Beverly was featured on a series of playing cards that were distributed by police throughout South Australia's prison systems in the hopes of getting convicted offenders to talk about cold cases. So Beverly was the Queen of Spades. A $200,000 reward was posted. Stephen ends up moving to Mount Gambier in the state's southeastern region near the border of Victoria. And it's now 2011, a year after his Aunt Beverly was beaten and stabbed in her own home for a few bucks. Stephen allegedly befriends a local recluse and invalid pensioner, another Stephen, this time named Stephen Newton. This Stephen suffers from crippling social anxieties. He's a shut-in. He only leaves his home when absolutely necessary. He was said to have been gentle and quiet. He had few friends and relied on outreach services of Centrelink and the Salvation Army for his social contact and for help with his home and his life. He liked video games and birdwatching. He doesn't appear to have made loads of friends, but somehow, unfortunately for Stephen Newton, he met Stephen Hainsworth, who lived just around the corner from him. In November 2011, the Salvation Army contacted police in Mount Gambier to do a welfare check on Stephen Newton because he hadn't been seen by the services that helped him on a semi-regular basis. That led to police forcing entry to his home. In a spare room full of rubbish, they slowly uncovered the decomposing remains of the 55-year-old Stephen under a pile of garbage. All they tell us is that he died as the result of an assault. It is believed that Stephen's body had laid undisturbed for around 8 weeks. His home had been completely ransacked. His large flat-screen TV, a DVD player, games and game systems were all stolen, along with tools and other household items, most of which were later recovered from a local pawn shop. In 2012, someone who is not Stephen Hainsworth pled guilty to theft and pawning some of Stephen Newton's stuff and served a 7-month jail term for it. They were not charged with assault or with any of the crimes that led to Stephen Newton's death, however. So perhaps this person is the source of information that police have used to recently tie these three seemingly random murders to the one man. Police closed in on Stephen Hainsworth and he knew it. DNA was sought and Stephen came out swinging in the media. I can find no record of Stephen Hainsworth having employment ever. He seems to have simply lived off welfare and charity, and a lot of his accommodation was actually paid for by Her Majesty's purse, you know. He spent vast amounts of his children's childhood bouncing in and out of prison on all kinds of offences. Let's just sum it up by saying he's a thief and a violent offender. He doesn't like to work, but he does like to beat people up. Stephen Hainsworth has a criminal history that is going to make you hate him. And I'm going to let you. There's an interview from skynews.com.au you can find on YouTube called I Am Not a Serial Killer, starring the awful dude that is Stephen Hainsworth. It's obvious that he's trying to clear his name in this interview, but it just makes you hate his guts. He is, for lack of a better word, fucking useless. His face is all smashed up from a fight. He is a chain-smoking, toothless yokel. And then at the end of the interview, he says he's 44. I was floored. He doesn't look a day over 80. He describes himself as couch surfing in Mildura at the time. He admits to having, quote, 5 or 6 different jail terms, and has been charged with theft, assault, aggravated assault, drink driving, and receiving stolen goods. What he doesn't admit to on camera is the multiple charges for domestic violence and abuse. Oh, and being a serial killer. He denies that one hardcore. He taunts police, saying, "If you think I'm guilty, come and get me." So, you know, they do. So here's the thing, people. In South Australia, we don't just let cold cases die. We have a task force that just doesn't let up. They're called Operation Resolute, or they've had different names over the years, but at the moment they're Operation Resolute. And that's what they do. They resolve shit. Many of the recent arrests of older crimes are at the feet of these dedicated cold case chasers. In fact, they have a motto. It's not a cold case. It just isn't solved yet. So keep looking over your shoulder, douchebags. In May last year, which was 2019, if you're listening to this at a future time, Stephen Hainsworth was being released from prison again on unrelated charges of burglary because, you know, he's just a really slow learner. He thinks he's going back to couch surfing and fucking up everyone's lives around him. But he is so wrong. He is the wrongest of the wrong. He makes it to the foyer of the prison where Victorian police and members of Operation Resolute are there to greet this asshole. Without breathing a single breath of free air, Stephen Hainsworth is arrested for the murder of his auntie, Beverly Hanley. He has a brief court appearance in Victoria and is extradited to Adelaide. He stood and was arraigned in the Adelaide's Magistrate Court, where it was revealed that over 240 statements will be used in his prosecution. Sounds like people hate him. It is unclear if or when he will be charged with the other two murders. The courtroom was packed with his family, but not supporting him. They say they're staring down the killer and they're there in support of Beverly, and that Stephen has no one behind him. But that's not quite true. In a recent interview with A Current Affair, Stephen's poor fucking confused young daughter tries to defend him, saying, "Of course he didn't do it. My daddy's not a murderer." But after a little conversation, the young girl, whose name is Angel, admits her father is violent and probably capable of murder, but that he couldn't murder old people. Then her resolve melts and it's just a really hard watch. We will have to await the trial and I will be on tenterhooks as this case against this alleged serial killer takes shape. And I, for one, can't wait to fucking talk about it. Today's podcast palate cleanser recommendation is season one of Dr. Phil's analysis of murder called The Killer Thorn of Gypsy Rose. I don't know what part of this one pulls at my innards the most, but the story of Gypsy Rose and Dee Dee Blanchard had me from hello. From the moment I read the first seedling report of an intellectually disabled kid involved in their mum's murder, don't know about you, but I was in. This one has everything. Dr. Phil goes deep. It has lies, deceit, fraud, child abuse, mental illness, and murder. I kind of mourned when this one was over. I just wanted more. I still want more. Dr. Phil, can you hear me? Help a girl out and let us know the update. Cheers. Sleep with one eye open and call the cops on all your dodgy neighbours. Hello again, it's me, Anne. Can I ask you a favour? If you liked this episode of Murderlade or any previous episodes, Please take a moment to rate and review if you are listening on Apple Podcasts, or alternately, head on over to Facebook and rate the show at the Myrtleade the Podcast page. Every rate and review helps other strange ones find us and join the family. Oh yeah, and I totally mean that in a creepy Manson family or the Aussie cult, the family kind of way. Thanks for listening.